conference of bare bottom cheerleaders for Team Coal, of course. The Supreme Court is considering Obama's ideas on climate change. The EPA is law. This is like challenging Obamacare business. It's already law. Every time anything comes up regarding an EPA regulation, the right is going to challenge it. And that's what we're seeing right now. Utilities industry is upset because, wait for it, too many Americans have noticed that solar energy is the cheapest energy there is once you get the architecture of it up and running and off the ground. So eyes on energy this week, because when you've got three events like that, conference in West Virginia, EPA in the Supreme Court, the utilities industry is upset because they're not making profits like they used to, all because of these degenerates who've opted for solar energy. In Jackson County, voters this May will vote on a proposed ban on GMO crops. Strangely enough, the state's campaign disclosure database, whereupon one might go to look for more information about this. Strangely enough, it suffered a mysterious cyber attack on February 4th. As of this weekend, it's back up. But meanwhile, agribusiness interests have been busy raising money, most of it for a massive out-of-state Monsanto-like substances. More on that later. In Washington, Governor Jay Inslee is still fighting the good fight to preserve the state's waiver from provisions of the federal No Child Left Behind. The next windmill, of course, will be the core curriculum. You think we could get this right, you know? And these past weeks, too, have written another chapter in the history of West Coast labor. Teachers in the Medford School District are set to return to their classrooms today after reaching a contract agreement to end the 16-day strike. It was a particularly nasty, vicious strike where people in their vehicles assaulted picketers and other forms of community cracks in the community, not exactly a united neighborly neighborly way of dealing with the strike. Today, the Obama administration is squaring off at the Supreme Court with industry groups and Republican-led states over a small but important program aimed at limiting power plant and factory emissions of gases blamed for global warming. Well, of course, it's global warming, but the fact is that these power plants, in many cases, shouldn't exist at all. They're ancient, they are polluting, and it's time to rethink the whole thing, because trying to constantly jerry-rig existing technology that has brought us to the some would say we're over the tipping point of climate collapse. Rebuilding this and attempting to regulate it is a hopeless task. And every 4 minutes, another household is installing a solar power system. And that's overall in the United States. Generous state and federal tax credits, not that generous, I'd say, for hooking up solar panels on roofs or in fields make solar energy very, very attractive, increasingly attractive to homeowners and businesses. Another bonus is that those who generate solar energy can roll over what they don't use as credit against their next utility bills. Utility companies aren't happy about that, and as always, they're taking steps to make their feelings known to all of us. And Moscow police have detained dozens of people outside a courthouse where eight anti-government protesters are to be sentenced for their role in the 2012 protest against Vladimir Putin. Lot going on in that part of the world right now. You can absolutely bet that Yanukovych is probably relaxing in a sauna in Moscow with Vladimir Putin right now. How do you lose? How does a three-car convoy vanish? Come on! I mean, the main. I was listening to not a commercial one, but another sort of quasi media outlet, and they actually said that the three convoy disappeared. It vanished. They can't find it. That seems a bit disingenuous. And, of course, Moscow, in the post-Sochi Olympics, you wanted to bask in the glow of triumph. And as the saying goes, of course, rest on its collective laurels. But it seems that what with Pussy Riot and demonstrators, trials of demonstrators, once and the insistent blare of anti-gay rhetoric issuing from the Kremlin, it seems that Moscow will remain in the public eye much far longer than Sochi, and not for the rosy reasons that Vladimir Putin perhaps had in mind. Ukraine's acting government did issue a warrant today for the arrest of Yanukovych. It was last seen in a pro-Russian Black Sea peninsula. He was in the Crimea. And now, of course, he's vanished. And we'll see what Yulia Tymoshenko has in mind for her nation at this point, because it looks like she's a shoo-in. Weather for our region, returning to Cascadia. Before we get into the stories for today, we'll keep trying to reach Dan Sears. Occasional rain, highs around 50, east wind 5 to 15. Well, I would say, yeah, that's true, but on steroids, the rain and the wind out in the far-flung areas east of Portland, it's a lot more extreme than that. And for tonight, overcast, it'll probably keep on raining. Lows around 35, east winds 5 to 15, but it could gust up to 20 or 30 miles per hour. And we could even see 45 mile an hour winds out in the gorge. For tomorrow, could get a bit of sun breaking through, slight chance of showers, highs around 50, winds 10 to 15, gusting up to 30. And again, if you're out in the gorge, winds could gust up to 45 miles per hour. So don't put anything light down, because you won't see it again until probably same time next year. For tomorrow night, partly cloudy in the evening, clouds moving in throughout the night, lows around 35, and the same windy conditions, 5 to 15, gusting up to as much as high as 45 miles per hour out in the gorge. We don't have an alternative forecast for you today. We were expecting our guest, but at this point, still no sign of the redoubtable Mr. Sears. So moving straight on into the news for today. Jackson County voters this May will vote on a proposed ban on genetically modified crops. Strangely enough, of course, the state's campaign disclosure database suffered a mysterious cyber attack on the 4th of this month. It's back up now. Meanwhile, agribusiness have been raising money, as we mentioned before in the headlines. So they've been raising money. Really? How much money? Give us an idea. And also, where are they getting it from? Well, they're certainly not getting it from Jackson County, that's for sure, because the amounts of money that are flooding into the coffers of these right-wing pro-GMO interests could buy the whole of Jackson County lock, stock, and two smoking barrels, which might please everyone there, since they want to secede anyway. But nonetheless, this money is coming from farm bureaus. Get this, farm bureaus and other agricultural interests around the country. The Ailing website currently shows that opponents reported raising more than $60,000 in recent weeks to fight the ban on the GMOs for the May 20th ballot. All told, they report raising nearly $170,000. Contributions include $10,000 from Western Sugar Cooperative of Denver, another $10,000 from the South Dakota Farm Bureau, which is pretty much owned by Monsanto, and a couple of other big ones, but mainly Monsanto. $5,000 from the Texas Farm Bureau, and $1,000 from the Indiana Farm Bureau. And the list goes on. Closer to home, opponents, and it's $10,000 contributions from the West Coast Beet Seed Company, GMO up to the eyeballs of Salem and Wilco, a Mount Angel Agricultural Supply Cooperative. The Deschutes, Yamhill, and Clackamas County Farm Bureaus also contributed. Shame on them. The sugar beet industry, which primarily uses genetically altered seeds, has been particularly active in funding the opposition camp. Supporters of the ballot measure include organic farmers who say they don't want their crops contaminated. So, and the fight goes on. More on, we have a very, very curious story coming out of occupied Palestine. I'm going to put all of that on the KBOO website, because as often happens, it's time to go. We're out of time. This has been Cascadia for Monday, February 24th, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stab. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host an open house to say goodbye to our interim station manager, Victoria Stoppiello,
and to welcome our new co-managers, Monica Beamer and Mike Crenshaw.
Please come to KBOO on March 1st between noon and 4 p.m. for greeting and meeting, snacks, tours, and a general celebration of the start of our 46th year broadcasting.
KBOO is located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, a half block south of Burnside in Portland.
Again, this March 1st, noon to 4, here at your community radio station, KBOO. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Senator Ron Wyden is sponsoring legislation that would double the logging on the so-called ONC lands in Oregon. It's estimated that approximately 200,000 acres of older forests currently protected by the Northwest Forest Plan would be shifted into logging, including clear-cutting, under Senate Bill 1784. This plan is drawing intense criticism from scientific and environmental organizations. This morning, we talked with Dominic Della Sala, chief scientist with the Geos Institute in Ashland, Oregon, about how doubling logging on BLM lands will elevate extinction risks to threaten wildlife, pollute streams with sediment runoff, and increase global warming pollution. Dominic, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having me on again, Barbara. Good to be here.
It's great to always have you here, clarifying lots of things for us. So today, let's start by clarifying what the ONC lands are. This was something in the news a lot, maybe a year ago, but people have probably forgotten what that even means.
Yeah, they're a subset of Bureau of Land Management lands here in Western Oregon that are the source of a lot of controversy right now, because there was a bill or a law actually back in 1937, the ONC Act, that set those lands up for timber production. But at the time, Congress was even wise enough to recognize that, yes, they are available for timber production, but you also have to maintain water quality. And so if you fast forward now to where we are in time, there have been a lot of laws that have been passed since 1937 that allow those forests to be managed from a multiple use standpoint. The legislation we're looking at now by Senator Wyden would tip that balance clearly in favor of unsustainable logging at the consequence of clean water, fish and wildlife habitat, and global warming pollution.
Or why is there pressure now to log these lands more than they've been logged historically?
Well, everyone's looking for a solution to the county's fiscal crisis without really taking on the much more complex and controversial needs of the counties, which have to either increase their revenue stream or cut their services to make up for the lack of funds coming from Congress to support the federal lands that are in those counties. And so what we've been asking all along is, let's continue to support those counties through through the congressional appropriations process. And in the meantime, those counties have to look for better ways to bring in revenues than clear-cutting some of the remaining mature and old-growth forests.
Well, one of the controversial aspects about Ron Wyden's Senate bill is that it incorporates a process called ecological forestry. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that there's some debate about the scientific efficacy of this. So I want to start by having you talk about the, I guess, the announcement that your group and several other scientific organizations made a few weeks ago denouncing the legislation and also denouncing ecological forestry. And then I want to also talk about some of the responses that you've gotten from Jerry Franklin, who's one of the co-authors of the papers about ecological forestry, to sort of sort, I want to sift out like the science behind all of this. So first of all, let's talk about why you are really concerned both about the practice of ecological forestry and how that would be applied.